Welcome to Death Watch. My name is Matthew Brown, and I'm listening. Over here.
Oh, you've set me up perfectly.
Yeah,
thank
I know.
You. And I'm Matthew Price.
That's correct.
And I'm also listening.
Are you?
Good. Well, because I got nothing.
No,
you
I
didn't
know.
Tell me.
Also, the person that died is not
is
the
not
person
listening.
who would weekly say, I'm listening.
That's correct.
But today, on our show where we eulogize the greats, we will be discussing the life and career of John Mahoney, who most people know from Frasier. And I hadn't watched a single episode of Frasier in, got to be 15 or 20 years. So I watched the pilot, and it all came flooding
He's
back to me.
Tremendous.
Just came flooding on back to me.
It's I feel a bit broken up. He was in our, we mentioned him in the roll call last time because it had just happened and felt it was very appropriate to do a show about him. But
oh, yeah. I mean,
this is not an easy one.
No, it's not. And
they
the
never
thing
are,
is,
but yeah.
When we were designing Death Watch, one of the original ideas was we were really going to wait for whoever passed in the month that we were going to record. Like, really try to do some fresh picks as they happen, so we could really kind of capture the moment of people mourning these people. And then we had a few months where that just kind of wasn't possible. There wasn't really somebody for us to do, or there were some other structural reasons. But this was the one where it was like, oh yeah, like as soon as that news broke across Twitter, and people are still eulogizing him weeks later on Twitter and other social media. As soon as that broke, it's like, oh yeah, this is the guy. So this episode will be dropping on March 30th of 2018. As always, you can support the Modern Superior Network, of which we are a part, by going to patreon.com/modernsuperior. And if you haven't done that yet, if you haven't gone there and plunked down your $5 monthly, you have made an error, friends. Because
there's some stuff to listen to on there.
Anyway. We had a special bonus episode that we recorded right after the Oscars this year, where we went into detail about the members of the annual Oscar death montage. And if I may say so, that episode is delightful.
It is, well, as for, delightful
for the
as
subject
anything,
matter, you know,
yes.
For anything that we do here.
I love...
I know.
The problem with this show.
Yeah, I know.
We're always tempering what we say. But it really is. It was incredibly joyful to do it, talk about some of these great people who... And that's, you know, it's a part of life, everyone.
Absolutely.
No one gets out of here.
It is funny
unscathed.
That, you know, you feel this natural tendency doing this show to kind of take a somber tone and be very respectful.
Yeah.
And we are very respectful.
But we're
at
also
the same
so
time,
happy with these people and their amazing lives. And we are joyful about the things they gave us, which is good and okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, before we get on to Mr. Mahoney proper, however, I believe it is time for another roll call.
Roll call.
Oh, great. Are we going to do like, we're going to have like a canned roll call?
We're going to have, I don't know what I did there. I went into like an ASMR voice.
No, I like it. And I'm going to put the sound of a bald eagle's cry over that. Just.
Roll call. So let's get on to roll call. So just quickly off the top of roll call, and then we'll get to the folks. And some of these may have actually been, because it's been a little while since the show, some of these folks actually we may have discussed even briefly in the Oscar montage because
indeed
they may have been in that just at the tail end of it. But before I get into the actual roll call list of names, I do want to mention something that I think is very significant. And for the people that for whom this is an interesting thing, I would direct your attention to the New York Times obituaries website because they have started a feature called Overlooked, where they are going to go back and look at the lives of especially women and people of color who were never eulogized in the obituary section.
That's great.
Isn't it? So they are actively trying to correct the record. The first about 20 of them are up now, and they're great.
Mm-hmm.
They're beautifully written, really considered, and they really go towards correcting the balance, and there's a lot of support articles there that talk about why the obituary, New York Times obituary, which is arguably the obituaries of record, why they are so kind of unbalanced towards white males, and how it's a reflection of, because they are always looking backwards, they're always looking at times that are less progressive, but then ultimately reinforcing, right?
So, of course. And that's the problem that we face here on this show, as I've mentioned on Twitter in the last couple months. It's like at the end of the day, because of the generation that we're from and because of the generation that is currently most likely to die off, which is, you know, performers in their 70s and 80s, we're biasing directly towards white people. We're biasing very often towards men, and certainly very often towards straight people.
John Mahoney.
And this episode's about John Mahoney, who was not straight, but who was a white male. And we're always, unfortunately, just because of our own cultural upbringing, I think, going to bias in that direction. So we're always looking for, you know, any opportunity to correct the record ourselves.
So
that's terrific.
So that really touched a nerve with me when I went to look, because I do check that as part of my roll call research, and to see that and to see how big an investment the New York Times has made in it.
That's great.
It's amazing. So there is, it has its own microsite called Overlooked.
This actually proposes that there should be a Death Watch Splinter podcast called Death Watch Overlooked, hosted by other people, like hosted by women and or people of color, not us, who do this as well. You know,
absolutely.
Because again, we will always, unfortunately, falter in the wrong direction on this.
Sure. So who passed away since our last show? Let's start with the great lady of retail, Sonia Batta, founder of the Batta Shoe Museum and CEO of Batta Shoes for many years, passed away. Arthur Black from CBC Radio, host of Basic Black, and a huge part of my childhood, and a wonderful, wonderful broadcaster. Idrissa Wodrego, who was the filmmaker from Burkina Faso. Emma Chambers, a British actress, starred on Vicar of Dibley and was in Notting Hill, played, I believe, Hugh Grant's sister in Notting Hill. And again, not very old, and I think died in her mid-40s.
Yeah, I think so.
Wonderful, wonderful British character actor. Sri Devi, the Bollywood superstar.
Who, there's a good example of, I wish I had the courage to figure out how to do a show about her, because all of that I've been reading about her and all of this
incredible
literature. Yeah, amazing stuff. I have no familiarity with her work at all, which I feel very badly about. And, you know, maybe down the road we'll be able to do her.
The wonderful Nanette Fabre, star, musical star, died in well into her 90s, had an amazing career. Bud Lucky, who is a producer, was a producer and animator for Pixar, and started off actually working on Sesame Street in the early part of his career, went and did animation for Sesame Street, went on to Pixar, and was the narrator for the short about the jackalope, Boundin, and was also the voice, played the government agent in The Incredibles.
Oh, cool.
Yes. And quite well loved at Pixar because he was sort of a bit older than everyone else. Anyway, he passed away. George S. Kaufman, not the playwright, but the other George S. Kaufman, who owned and brought back from the dead Astoria Studios in Queens, which is actually where Sesame Street and many other shows filmed in New York are made.
No kidding.
And Astoria Studios would have died and instead is a thriving studio in Queens, New York, all due to his efforts. So he passed away as well. The Weinstein Company passed away earlier.
Yow. Well, there you go.
Yes. Fatally killed by, succumbed to an internal cancer.
That's correct.
Yes. So no more. Cynthia Heimel, who was the sex advice columnist for the Village Voice, wrote many books on sex and sexuality, amazing advice columnist. Passed away earlier this month. Lewis Gilbert, the film director of several 007 films.
Yep.
Also Alfie and Educating Rita. Great.
Fantastic.
British light touch. Did most of the solid Roger Moore 007s, where it's really about this sort of light comedic.
Yeah, he was Spy Who Loved Me, right?
Yeah, yeah, I believe so, yeah. Barry Crimmins, the comedian, and also anti-child pornography crusader, passed away. Crimmins gave a start to hundreds of comedians in the Boston comedy scene in the 80s, was a wonderful comedian himself, and was one of the first people to go after online sites like AOL for housing child porn and allowing people to trade it anonymously.
Wow.
Harvey Schmidt, who was the co-author of The Fantastics, the longest running play in New York City history, off-Broadway history. David Ogden Stiers.
Of course.
Of course. Unfortunately, passed away earlier this month, Cogsworth, and more importantly, Major Winchester.
No, not more importantly, Cogsworth.
No, more importantly.
No, I'm sorry.
Major Winchester. You
and I are only a couple of years apart in age, and yet that's the difference, right? I don't give a fuck about MASH, but I do care about Beauty and the
crucial.
Beast.
MASH is crucial. Roger Bannister, the first man to break the 4-minute mile.
Oh.
Passed away. Harry J. Uffland, the producer of Last Temptation of Christ, many other films, including, I believe, the film we watched yesterday.
Oh, no kidding.
Or on the weekend, yes. Russ Solomon, the founder of Tower Records. Paul DeMeo, screenwriter, wrote The Rocketeer and was, weirdly, one of the creators of The Sims, worked in video games just as much as he did in films.
Really?
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, yeah. Stephen Hawking.
Of course.
Of course.
Another one where I really wish I had the brain capacity to come up with a way to do a show about him because it would be a fascinating show.
Sure.
But what do we do?
What do we do? Yeah.
I don't know quantum physics. And I'm not gonna by April.
Give him till May, folks.
That's right. Yeah.
Hip hop's Craig Mack, one of the early founders of sort of crucial early figures in hip hop. And then just this week, comedian Mike McDonald, I would say Canada's greatest road comic in history ever, maybe the greatest sort of touring regular comedian in anywhere ever, just brilliant. Gary Burden, the album designer, died this week. If you can think of a sort of any classic album from the 60s or 70s that features photography as opposed to illustration, it's generally Gary Burden that did the design. Kate Wilhelm, sci-fi author. And just today, Mike Jones from CODCO. He was the sort of creative force, the director of the show, put all of those people, Rick Mercer, Mary Walsh, his sister Kathy Jones, his brother Andy Jones, put them all on the map. And really brought an incredibly unique comic perspective to Canadian television that we'd never seen before. And Newfoundland comedy is its own special thing, and it is worth treasuring. And he was kind of the driving force behind it. We lost him earlier today.
Wow.
So that is Roll Call.
Roll Call. Fantastic.
Quite a list.
Thank you for that, Mr. Price.
Thank you.
And now, as I said, we will be going into the life and times of one John Mahoney. I'll just do a quick bio. I'll tell you exactly which one.
Yes.
Stand by. He was born on June 20th, 1940, in England, which most people don't realize. He moved to the States when he was 18 years old, which is crazy, given that he basically made a career for himself playing 80 American blue-collar types over and over again. Went to university in Illinois, joined the American Army. He became the editor of a medical journal where he worked for most of the 1970s, and then he didn't like it. He realized he didn't like that career, wasn't going to do it forever, so he started taking theater classes and decided to start acting full-time in 77. He was encouraged by one John Malkovich, who we will eventually cover here on the show, to join the Steppenwolf.
Well, that was ominous. Wow. How do you know we're going to outlive Malkovich?
Well, I don't, but I'm willing to take the bet.
He's very healthy.
That's true. He's doing just fine. So Malkovich encourages him to join.
I know. Everyone we mention, who will eventually appear on the show.
We will get them sooner or later. We will discuss in more detail at the appropriate moment. Malkovich encourages him to join the Steppenwolf Theater in Chicago, which is where he really became sort of a. They were the eulogy that I read first when he passed away.
Yeah.
He was a big deal there. He was 37 years old when he joined Steppenwolf. So again, as many people have said on Twitter, you're never too young. You're never too old. You know, if there's a thing you want to do, go do it. It doesn't actually matter when you try to do it. His first major film role, was in the film that we watched on the weekend, which was Barry Levinson's Tin Men, in which he plays one of the Tin Men, surprisingly.
Yes.
And they hear, you know, you hear throughout the film about how he's the greatest that ever was. You don't really see him ply his trade until about two-thirds of the way through the movie. And then he does this scene where he's conning a guy, conning a potential customer with this deal where he's going to give him back money for every reference that his newly yes. beautiful house generates. And then he has a heart attack right in the middle of the sales pitch. And, sorry, spoilers for Tin Man. And it's just fantastic. Right, it is a very short scene. It is his first sort of the scene, first scene in the movie where he is the central focal point, and he sails it. It's fantastic. Yeah. So from there, he's in all kinds of movies.
He gets this great part in Moonstruck.
Yeah,
not very big.
Well, this is what I was going to say. This is
sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say. So this is where I first encounter him because I think I saw Moonstruck when I was like 12 years old. Yeah. And yeah, he has a great small part in it, which is he's the guy that has an impromptu dinner with Olympia Dukakis. Yes. Yeah, keeps getting dumped.
Keeps dating women too young. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's amazing. He has this great dinner with Olympia Dukakis where he thinks maybe this is finally his opportunity to get with someone closer to his own age. And she sees right through him and she's like, no, I mean, you're an asshole. Like, this isn't happening. I'm a married woman. I'm out of here. Yeah. What are you talking about? Great performance. He is obviously the father in Say Anything, which is, I think, where a lot of people know him from. And then he joins the cast of Frasier at its inception in 92. I feel like it was 92.
Feel like it, yeah.
Yeah, and then that fucking show runs for another 12 years, which is crazy. Yep. It's still crazy to me this day that Frasier actually ran as long as Cheers.
Longer. Yeah.
No, I think they're both 12 seasons. So I know that Kelsey Grammer was not on Cheers the whole way through, but but he really played that character for literal decades, and a large part of that obviously was Mahoney playing his dad, and you know the Dweezil playing Niles, but you know like the creation
David Hyde Pierce. We'll do a show about him soon.
Yes, what? We will have you eventually, David. No, you know the three of them together, and that entire cast is terrific.
Yeah, Leaves.
Yeah, absolutely.
Everybody. Yeah,
but that entire family, both you know, assembled family and blood family on that show is just an incredible group of actors working together for comedy.
At this incredibly high level.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like, that show was always extremely well produced, extremely well written. That was John Mahoney. He was predeceased by Moose, the dog who played Eddie on Frasier, who died on June 22nd, 2006. And now, unfortunately,
and then
John Mahoney
just 11 years later,
yeah, that's right.
Mahoney succumbed to the sadness.
It's finally,
the passing of Moose.
Finally took him down.
I can't take another year of this.
Yeah. That's correct.
Yeah.
Okay, so what we do on Death Watch is that we go back and we try to watch the works of the dead that we may have not previously seen.
That we have not seen.
Yeah. I had a great opportunity.
Oh, yeah.
I had not seen Barton Fink yet. And so I was like, finally, I'm going to rip the can off on that thing. Like, this is the time.
Yeah.
But you had to work really hard.
Well,
to find
I have
some
seen,
movies.
I like John Mahoney so much,
of
apparently,
course.
That I had seen almost everything.
Yep.
It was very difficult to find anything noteworthy, anything substantial. That I hadn't already seen. I had seen Eight Men Out. I'd seen every like pretty major performance that he gave. So yeah. So that alone says, you know, that's the real testament that this is such a quality actor because I had already sought out almost all his work.
Right.
So I eventually landed on two pretty early films for him. One being Streets of Gold, where he plays, it's a very small part. I think he's credited like fifth or sixth in the credits. But ultimately, it's a story about Klaus Maria Brandauer and two boxers played by Adrian Pastar and Wesley Snipes.
How old is Adrian Pastar?
He is like the same age as Wesley Snipes, I think, because they're both, he's a bit younger than Snipes in that film, so maybe a little bit younger.
He's been
not
everything
by much.
Forever.
Yeah, yeah. And he's in great shape because he plays a fighter in this, so he's really like, built and it's just an okay boxing movie. Mahoney plays the president or the whatever the guy that's running the American Golden Gloves Olympic boxing team, and he's the one giving Brandauer and these two young fighters a shot at joining the team. So he doesn't have a lot of scenes. He has his few scenes, and then you know, and he's terrific in it. He's very present. There's not a ton for him to do.
Was this before or after Tin Man?
Oh, before.
Okay.
So this is really, I mean, Tin Man's the first
big role.
Actual, role of significance, right? This is before that. And And so that I thought, well, that's not quite enough. I should do something else, right? Because I'm like, well, I haven't really seen him do much, so I'll try something else. So then I went out and found the movie Betrayed.
Okay.
Which is actually, although he, again, does not have a huge part in it, it's a fascinating use of him. It's basically two films after Moonstruck. So he was in Frantic with Harrison Ford.
Was he?
The Roman Polanski. Again, a small part. But he was still in that phase where he was just a solid sort of side guy, right?
Right.
So it's not really until... say anything that people start to go, oh, you can say John Mahoney's in it,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's a few films after that. But yeah, he's in Frantic and then Betrayed, which was a Costa Gavras film that I had, one of these movies that's like always in the video store. I mm-hmm. kind of had been aware of it. Stars Deborah Winger and Tom Berenger. And for whatever reason, that wasn't enough to get me to see it. Costa Gavras wasn't enough to get me to see it. But man, it's a movie about a hidden cell of white supremacist, militia,
whoa,
nut jobs,
whoa,
and to see that movie play out now,
yeah,
is something else, man. It is something else. So Mahoney is one of the good guys in the group. So the story is that at the beginning of the movie, a loudmouthed, irascible radio loudmouth host guy. Like sort of like a provocateur radio guy.
Sure.
Like us.
Yeah.
He's on his show in Chicago talking about how racism is terrible and inviting racists to call in so he can make fun of them. And then he's walking to his car and he's gunned down.
He's betrayed. You might say.
Well, he's not betrayed. He's moited. And then he is killed. And then it cuts to, there's credits, and then you're in farm country.
Yep.
And Deborah Winger is driving a combine, and she's making friends with Tom Berenger.
Sure.
And then even though the movie doesn't outright tell you this, every summary and synopsis of it will tell you this, she is an undercover FBI agent assigned to investigate whether Berenger may have had something to do with this murder, because the FBI suspects him of being part of a homegrown terror cell, mm-hmm. white supremacist terror cell, similar to Timothy McVeigh and all of these other. So, and Mahoney is like his buddy. There's a lot of these buddies in the movie. And they're all so decent. Mahoney's so decent. Such a lovely guy who also is like, I mean, we gotta kill the blacks and the Jews. What are we gonna do? Like, it's very... It's very blood in the face. I don't know if anyone's seen that documentary,
no.
But like, it's very like it's well done in the sense that it almost feels like going inside a Trump rally, like where the baseline assumptions are so wrong, but they don't see them as wrong. Like this, we're going to lose our country. You know, mm-hmm. like it's very like that.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that is scarily on message for right now.
It really is.
You know?
It really is. Yeah.
You hope society is heading in one direction and then it all just loops on back.
The thing that's very, very disturbing about it is how much these people would have seemed like crackpots
mm-hmm.
in 1987. Like, I feel like watching this movie in 1987, there would have been like, oh, this is pretty exaggerated.
Yeah.
I'm sure this happens, but it seems very sensationalized.
Right.
Now I'm watching going like, nah, where's yep. my, no, this is happening.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, so
as we used to say on our other show, stuff like this was you know one level of bad before social media. But good Lord, as soon as these people knew how to get in touch with each other, oh shit!
Oh well, there's all kinds of scenes of him going like, "Do you know how to use computers?" Like they're on message boards talking to each other and planning, coordinating things.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Terrific. And yeah. Mahoney's like you don't usually see Mahoney play kind of a yeah, bad guy.
He's a lovely, approachable, warm. Evil dude.
Wow.
It's really a fun sort of weird dichotomy. Like again, it is very outré in certain ways. I'm going to ruin a bit of this movie, but I have
30 years ago.
Because yeah, if you haven't seen Betrayed, feel free. But so Deborah Winger is getting to know Tom Berenger and they're starting to kind of fall in love and he's starting to wonder if he can trust her. And so he takes her on a hunt. And when I say he takes her on a hunt, he takes her out to hunt a black dude.
Oh.
Yes. So this is his way of finding out if she's okay.
Wow.
Yeah. So they give the black dude, they haul him out of the car, take the blindfold off of him, hand him a shotgun with 10 shells in it, and say, you run, and it's this is what you got. So he's got a quote-unquote fair chance to fight. It's the craziest. Oh, and Ted Levine. Mm-hmm. Is one of he's more like the enforcer guy in the group, and he doesn't trust Deborah Winger.
Well, sure.
And so there's a lot of scenes of him just eyeing her up and down, very suspicious.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's...
Wow.
Yeah.
This is worth seeking out.
It's worth seeking out. It's sort of both scary and ridiculous, mm-hmm. kind of all at once. Yeah. Yeah.
It's I just looked it up on the IMDb. It's a Joe Esterhaus script as
well. It is, yeah. So that's the other thing. Yeah, it's really a Joe Esterhaus script. So all the good and all the bad that might come with,
wow.
you know, a Joe Esterhaus script when he was still just like writing scripts that people would pay him to write instead of thinking he was smart.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
This is 4 years before he was the highest paid screenwriter on
right.
the planet.
This is right before Music Box.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah. Fascinating. That career has always amazed me. If any of our younger listeners don't know who we're talking about, go look up his profile because there's some amazing shit.
Oh, I can't wait to do his show.
Oh. We're coming for you too, Joe.
Yeah.
Yeah. We get everyone eventually.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Great.
Well, yeah, that was my homework. Yeah. I tried my best. I feel like I did okay.
You did fine.
Both of them
you
are fine.
I mean, this will be an interesting thing as we go on further on the show, because, I mean, one of the things we knew kind of going in is you've seen everything, and I've seen 40%.
Yeah.
So
I always feel like there's something.
Sure, but yeah. I'll always have the home field advantage on finding sort of the meatier part that I've just never got around to, whereas you're going to have to, like, sort of dig around the marginalia, which is a lot more fun, because you're going to find the weirder shit.
I guess, but I can't wait to talk about Barton Fink.
Oh yeah, so let's talk about this. I have a hot and cold history with the Coens.
Like a mostly hate and occasionally love.
No, it's not mostly hate. It's just hot and cold. Like, I mean, I really didn't like Fargo when it came out, and I found the very significant adulation around Fargo confusing, and it put me off them for many years. But, you know, I've been working my way back through since I, like, landed on stuff like A Serious Man and No Country and, you know, the things of the last 10 years, which I found, you know, much more my speed. I've been working my way back through a lot of the earlier stuff and finding that, oh, yeah, I really do like Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou, which I never bothered to see at the time because I was just like, ah, fuck these guys. You know, stuff like that.
Who hurt you?
Exactly. Well,
Fargo.
They did. Fargo hurt me. So that said, Barton Fink is a fucking masterpiece, like stone cold,
thank you,
top
yes.
to the bottom,
yes,
masterpiece.
Yes.
And as I was saying the other day, I immediately texted one of my friends from film school, and I was like, I wish two things. One, I wish I had seen this before I went to film school.
Yep.
And two, I wish I had watched it every week while I was at film school. Yep. Like, it's just not that I think I would have understood it, because, you know, I think when I was 18, I would have really thought that, you know, Barton Fink was an unvarnished hero in this story.
Oh, God, no.
Yeah, no, of course not.
Hey, no.
No, not even slightly. And I don't know if I, at that time, enough fetishized the studio system, like old Hollywood, to really fall in love with it the way I did the other day. But now, oh, yeah. Like that, yeah. This is everything I want in a film, in a feature film. Having nothing to do with John Mahoney, whose role here is quite good, but also quite small. But
significant
oh,
to
very
the film.
Oh, very much so, yeah.
And also, like, historically kind of really interesting that they would get him to sort of play the William Faulkner
Yeah, absolutely.
Part.
So
yeah.
So Barton Fink, this young man, goes out to Hollywood. He's a young playwright who's been conscripted to work in the
He's
pictures.
Clifford Odets.
Yeah, he's yeah. Clifford Odets.
Yeah.
And he, you know, as many of the articles that I read after watching the movie take pains to point out, it's all quite exaggerated. You know, Odets did not hate working in Hollywood nearly
right.
this much.
Right.
Faulkner didn't hate working in Hollywood right. nearly this much. But the Coens did say that the fact that they discovered that Faulkner had written a wrestling movie starring Wallace Beery, that was the start of the whole thing for them. They were like, what the fuck?
Right,
and
right.
they basically
People just
worked...
did things for when they got told to do them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And they just kind of worked backwards from there into this wonderful kind of essay about sort of the creative ideal and how many ways you can regress that to the workman processes of actually
sure.
just creating product and creating entertainment.
Yeah, and how writer's block can be
yeah.
this, you know, physical thing.
And, absolutely, yeah. and the way yeah. you can bring it upon yourself simply by, you know, like, the, yeah. the, there, I, it's a again, the reason I'm sort of glad I didn't see this when I was a teenager is I would not have understood the degree to which Barton's head is up his own ass. Like,
right.
I just wouldn't.
Right.
I wouldn't have been able to capture that until I was significantly older. But then, yeah, you have the Faulkner character, who is played by John Mahoney, and is introduced vomiting off screen in a stall on a silk handkerchief, and then comes out. And I think he has two scenes in the movie where you see him. He has two scenes where you see him, and you have two scenes where you hear him. Because my favorite scene of his in the movie is where Barton goes to the back lot to talk to him at his office, and his secretary answers the door and won't let Barton in and won't let him see him because you can just hear him off screen having a drunken rant.
Yes.
And you can't really make out anything that he's saying, but you just hear like... And it's magnificent. And the idea, just the mental image of Mahoney doing that in a sound booth, very much like the one we're in right now, just amuses the shit out of me. Like, I love the idea of it. It's great. So all that said, his performance as this guy who has this, you know, this scene where they all go out for a picnic and he kind of waxes about both the joys and the pains of writing and then wanders off with a bottle and you never see him
again.
I don't
know if you noticed, but between this and Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, nothing good ever happens at a picnic in
these
Coen Brothers movies.
No.
There's never a good... Even the scenes outdoors eating in Raising Arizona, there's never a good picnic.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah.
What happened to these guys at a picnic?
I know, it's weird.
Yeah.
And it's such a nice place and everything. Yeah. Anyway, it doesn't matter. He says that he's basically building a wall inside of himself using alcohol.
In order to survive.
In order to survive and to function. Yeah. And he's this great, I don't know, he's this great figure in the first half of the movie that then expires and you don't see him again. But
and he's sort of replaced by John Goodman, I guess.
Yeah. But yeah, what a great, I mean, I think we mentioned in the Harry Dean Stanton show that one of the challenges also that we're going to have here is we're going to be talking about a lot of character actors, and character actors by definition sort of do these supporting roles where they have maybe one or two great scenes in a movie. Like we just said with Tin Man, he's got basically one scene that is about him in that whole movie. He's in a lot of others, but he's...
Yeah,
you know.
But I would say that even that scene is not about him. So,
oh, fair enough. But focused on him.
Yeah, no, I agree. But I guess what I want to say about Mahoney especially, but all great character actors in general... is that what they have is this really strong ability to understand that the point of them being there is to illuminate things about the main character.
Yeah.
Not to, you know, and so in essence, if you watch a Mahoney performance, it's always directed back at what is he telling us about the other person.
Right.
Through his performance.
Yeah. And
it's a brilliant kind of communication.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, and this is a skill that's it is very hard to see, but you do sort of know it when you do see it, which is that exact thing, which I call it the technical craft of film acting, where it's like a film actor is not just there to play a character and they're not just there to inhabit an emotion or an idea. They are there to help tell the overall story.
Yeah.
And that is much more specific than just inhabiting a person within that story. Like they have goals with respect to the overarching narrative, with respect to all of the themes, that if they're really good, and Mahoney was obviously extremely good, they will, again, lay those bricks themselves and help the wall get built, whether it's built out of booze or whatever the hell that mucilage in the walls was or whatever else it is.
The scene in Tin Man is a great one for that because the scene is ostensibly about him saying that he is going to retire, but what's really happening is he is telling the Richard Dreyfuss character to get out.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to say you should get out.
Yeah,
right. It's just, but that's really that's what it's about.
Right, exactly. So I mean, that's I guess what I took away from this whole experience. So we, you know, you and I watched Tin Man together on the weekend, and then I watched Barton Fink the next day. And I mean, so that I think I feel very lucky that those are two films I had not seen before, and that I got to consider so close together and in the context of Mahoney's death, because I think I found sort of here's what I really admired about that guy.
Yeah.
Not that I wouldn't have liked to have seen a Lucky like movie where he was just the lead. That would have been great. That would have been fascinating.
Yeah.
But you want to see what a supporting actor, what a character actor can do in a supporting role. These are great examples of that.
Yeah, it's he has a very great understanding of sort of acting as reacting and listening. And like even when he's delivering speeches, you see him doing it and still listening to the people around him. And like it's all about what information he takes in, I think.
Sure.
So it's really the strongest thing about his sort of his technical craft or whatever. It's even on Frasier, like the Frasier doesn't work if they're not listening to each other because it's all farce.
Yeah, of course.
Right. So
yeah. And I mean, I never saw him on stage, obviously. But it is, like, in terms of a narrative of a career, the idea that this guy did 10 years in the theater and then goes to film. And those are very, you know, you have very different responsibilities in those two acting styles. And to see kind of the degree to which he sort of instinctively understands what's required of him in a film, I'm just, you know, consistently impressed by that.
It feels tragic that I never did see him on stage. I imagine people who did were, you know, lucky.
Yeah, yeah. I think so.
Yeah.
Anything else about John Mahoney you'd like to bring up before we wrap the show?
No, I don't think so. I you know, just that I hope that people do, if they haven't sought out some of these earlier films, Moonstruck and Tin Men. And
definitely Moonstruck. I mean, for reasons having nothing to do with
for
him,
all
but
reasons.
He's also amazing, but Moonstruck's a stone-cold classic.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Yeah.
It is I believe it is the film we quote from the most in my house.
Well, I mean, it certainly had a run in mine as well because, you know, the Italian side of my family, they found that whole thing hilarious.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. So check out Moonstruck, check out Tin Men, Barton Fink.
Definitely Burton Fink. And now I'm going to have to
say
go
anything.
And I'm going to have to go check out The Hudsucker Proxy, which is another one of the Coens that I have not yet got around to. And he's in that. And as I was reading on the weekend, it is a shame. Those are his only two Coen performances.
Yeah, he seemed very well suited to that.
Yeah.
Just one of those things where he got on a hot TV show and I think probably didn't do a lot of film acting. But
yeah
he was absolutely could have been one of those guys that was in all of them.
Yeah for sure.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you, everyone, very much for listening. This episode, as I mentioned, is dropping at the end of March. We have not yet decided on our April subject, but that person may be waiting in the wings even now.
Maybe they're not feeling well today.
That's right. Anything can happen between now and then. But our next
Looking
show...
at you.
Nope. That is as far as I will go with that. You can shout at us on Twitter at DeathWatchPod. You can go to ModernSuperior.com and leave comments. If you are a Patreon supporter at any tier, you can get at us on the Modern Superior Slack. And if you're a $5 tier or above, you get that bonus episode. And there will be at least one more bonus episode this year. We haven't quite decided what it's going to be, but it'll be in the summer or in the fall. And we would love any feedback or suggestions that you have on that, because God knows we've got ideas, but most of our ideas are not that good. So, you know, feel free to tell us where we're doing it wrong. Thank you very much for listening. We'll talk to you next time.
This episode has been brought to you by the Modern Superior Podcast Network.